Evening, everybody. So my talk tonight is to share about the recent Branching Streams Conference, and it's also a talk about the importance of spiritual friends. I would like to start out by recognizing the suffering and tragedy of the recent school shooting in Texas and the grocery store shooting in Buffalo, New York. I think the grief from these events, which are increasingly common, it can be so overwhelming. And sustaining our bodhisattva way, I think, can feel unusually difficult, perhaps, at times like this. And so I think a talk touches on spiritual friends is fitting. You know, I think we can't do this bodhisattva work without each other and without spiritual friends assisting us, make it fun, take the edge off sometimes too. You've probably heard the quote. It's from what gets called the Nikaya Sutta, but it's specifically the Samyutta Nikaya Upada Sutta, where Ananda, who's the Buddha's cousin and his close attendant, says to Buddha, good friends are half the spiritual life. Buddha responds, not so, Ananda. Maybe a little less head nod. He says, not so, Ananda. Good friends are the whole of spiritual life. And then in the sutta, Buddha goes on to illustrate how you can learn a lot from your spiritual friends. You know, try to emulate them, also be inspired by their good qualities, and you know, move through life together. And so while good spiritual friends are certainly here in our Sangha, I think it's important too to get a broader perspective, you know, just our corner of earth in the DMV, and really see that we are maybe a seemingly small part of something that is so big and conveys so much beauty and kindness. And so I'd like to introduce you to some of the spiritual friends that I had the privilege of meeting in our Mahasangha, who inspired me both at the Branching Stream Conference and their expression of the Bodhisattva vows, and certainly in the weeks since, and hopefully in the years to come. And I hope they inspire you too. So the Branching Streams Conference, it's a gathering that happens about every 2 years, you know, COVID notwithstanding. And it's a network of sanghas in the lineage of the great priest and old Buddha, Shohaku Shunryu Suzuki, of which All Beings Zen is a part of the lineage. And as a sangha, you know, you may not know, we actually pay dues. It's just an annual fee to be a part of this network. It's so important to us. So the group is called Branching Streams, and it's from a line in the Sandokai, which is a poem that we chant in our collection of chants and poetry. It's attributed to the Zen ancestor Sekito Kisan, who lived from 700 to 790. And the specific lines are, the spiritual source shines clear in the light, the branching streams flow on in the dark. So I had the chance to attend the recent conference. It was April 25th to 28th. It was in Austin, Texas. And our beloved guiding Dharma teacher and senior priest in Ryu, and approximately 40 practitioners, teachers, and Sangha leaders were there. It was just frankly remarkable to be with 40 human beings who I was not immediately related to in this post-COVID world we live in. So the location of the gathering, it changes from year to year. This one was held at a conference center called the Ancient Yoga Center. And it was a retreat space. It was on 230 acres of land that was outside of Austin, Texas. And it was on a Hindu temple and ashram dedicated to Radha and Krishna. And so people came from as far as Vancouver, British Columbia. Technically, someone was from Germany, although she'd been practicing in California. She actually does live in Germany. And then, of course, there was heavy representation from Californians and Texans as well. Inri Sensei played a key role in the program's steering and organizing committee, and she was also MC for the day at times too. And so, guys, you know how sesshin, no matter how many years you've been doing it, it is rigorous and intense. And we grow close to one another because we practice silently, side by side. And maybe we don't know very much about each other. Well, I just want to be clear. This Branching Streams conference was not that. Right. It was nothing but chatter, and it was delightful. It was intensely social. It was, I call it affectionately, Soto Zen summer camp. You know, it was cool though too, because like, you know how in Sesshin you get this really soft, vulnerable, tender vibe? And that was there too. It was this kind of tender community feeling of practice. And it was right there and present, like amidst the ongoing, all seemingly nonstop chatter. And so we practiced Zazen in the mornings and the evenings. We did brief ceremonies as well. You know, but for me though, it was the times in between. It was the transitions between activities. It was over meals. It was walks back and forth to where we were staying in the sort of downtime. You know, that's where I found it was connecting with everybody, meeting new friends, and especially getting a glimpse into what's just an incredibly unique and beautiful way that everyone expresses both themselves and their practice. And that's what was so special for me. So I'd like to briefly introduce you to a few of the wonderful people I had the privilege of meeting, who instantly are also your Sangha friends and family. Maybe you've met them, maybe you haven't yet, but hopefully you will in the future. And some of them you may remember. For example, Galen Godwin, who's the abbot of the Houston Zen Center and director of the Soto Zen International Center. She came to speak with us just this last September. So she was there. Tova Green, who wears so many hats in the lineage, it's too many to count. She lovingly visited us back in at least 2018, if not other visits as well. So there is also the current abbot of San Francisco Zen Center, David Zimmerman, who was there, as was the soon-to-be new abbot of San Francisco Zen Center, Mako Vogel, and she's at Austin Zen Center currently. But here are a few of the others too. So there's Paula Lazars. Paula was my roommate, and she's an ordained 60-year-old priest. She's a city girl from Chicago. She's also a Kung Fu master. She was inducted into the Martial Arts Hall of Fame. She teaches Kung Fu, Soto Zen, Qigong, and runs the Warrior's Path Buddhist Academy. And she integrates all of these practices for the benefits of her students and well-being. I met Lynn Snow. Lynn received lay entrustment. So she's a lay Dharma teacher. And that was a lay entrustment she received from Abbot Galen Godwin back in 2020. In the midst of the pandemic, actually, it was in October of 2020. And Lynn calls herself the lead coordinator of the Tuscaloosa, Alabama Zen Center. And her Zen Center is housed within the Unitarian Universalist Church, and they integrate Soto Zen, Vipassana, Christian prayer, nature and practices, and other practices as well in a way to respond to the community. And one of the things I found so touching is Lynn said that many people who come to her Zen Center really believe that they're going to go to hell for meditating. And so the seemingly eclectic practice that the Tuscaloosa Zen Center practices is also this deeply welcoming response to the community. There's also John and Victoria. They're from Mid-City Zen in New Orleans. And I make them sound like they are a married couple to each other, but they are not. John works in community-based social justice. Victoria works as a social justice-focused lawyer. And what's remarkable to me is that the Mid-City Zen Sangha at times has had a resident teacher, but currently it is lay-led as a sangha. And they rely largely on the Branching Streams Network to support their sangha and to keep it going and to keep it thriving. So for example, on this last Sunday, the May 22nd, they had a precept ceremony and John Voss took the precepts and they had a visiting teacher come to facilitate that. So the commitment and the practice dedication, both John and Victoria, and frankly, their whole Sangha demonstrate to keep their Sangha going, especially in the midst of, I think, the climate impacts that New Orleans is so vulnerable to. Victoria said to me that she and her partner spend a tremendous amount of financial resources and material resources preparing to leave the city in case of emergency. It was really touching to me too, just to see how the climate crisis makes their sangha so vulnerable and yet so special. It's really humbling. I met Hakusho, who is the founder of the Brattleboro Zen Center in Vermont. Hakusho is also a Master's of Divinity student. He's working on a chaplaincy degree, and he does a lot of hospital-based Zen chaplaincy. And he's at the Institute of Buddhist Studies. And so Hakusho and I are classmates. So we spent the last semester being in the same class together online, and it was completely special and unexpected to get to meet in person. And Hakusho started the Brattleboro Zen Center during the pandemic. He and his wife moved across the country from California to Vermont. And he said that it was a really difficult time, the pandemic. And it was also personally difficult to have moved so far from where they'd been. And I was touched by his description. He said in many ways, starting the Zen Center saved him and kept him going. And then of course, last but not least, the Richmond Zen Center. Guys, they're in Virginia. They're 2 hours away. And we laughed pretty hard that we had to go all the way to Texas to meet our regional neighbors. And they are led by their priest, Aiden, and Stan and John. And we swapped Spotify playlists of Dharma-based tunes, which is pretty great. We hiked, we laughed. And hopefully we'll get to do some Sangha outings together pretty soon. We've planned a joint Sangha field trip to Freer Museum July 16th. So coming up in a couple months, to see the Mind Over Matter Zen and Medieval Japan exhibit, where Inryu has some commentary. It's really special. So in addition to new friendships, learning about the way other sanghas are handling online hybrid zendos and doing outreach with younger sangha members and coming up with new ways to stay connected, just the energy and the practice innovations and just the sincere commitment that had such diverse expressions, which was so inspiring to me. I'd also like to share a little bit about some of the workshops that we did together. So it wasn't all just hanging out, I swear we did workshops. It was 2 full days together, and then we had an afternoon and a bit of a morning together as well. So during the first morning of the conference, we did a 2-hour small group activity called Healing Circles. Healing Circles is an intimate, deep listening practice. It's based on compassionately bearing witness and experiencing our interconnectedness. So it's very practice focused, but it doesn't necessarily come from the Soto Zen group. And so it uses this basic but powerful human tool of social support and being present together, sharing time, and bringing that spirit of acceptance to the suffering, or uncertainty, joys of others in the group. And it created this really tender sense of community. So in essence, these healing circles, it's the core of our practice, right? Being vividly present, accepting all that is, and expanding compassion from ourselves to others. So hopefully we'll give healing circles a try, actually. Here at All Beings, maybe in the year to come. Stay tuned. We also did a poetry workshop, and it was led by a powerhouse of a poet named Naomi Shihab Nye. I would also like to say I had the great honor of being confused with the other Naomi. It was an absolute blessing. So Naomi Shihab Nye is a prolific awarded American poet. She is a creative writing educator, and frankly, she's just a bright, shining light of a human being. She stated, at the outset of the workshop, she stated something to the effect that you don't have to love poetry. Poetry loves you. I mean, you can only get away with saying that if you're a poet. It's really touching. It was this idea that, something else is reaching back to you. It's the spirit of the love of poetry. So she presented all of these simple but powerful compositions for poems. She read from lots of her friends and poetry mentors. She told us about something called a poetry pharmacy in the UK. So you go in with maybe an ailment of the heart, and they will prescribe a poem to cure what ails you. She guided us as we scribbled some poetry. One of my favorite moments of the workshop is she said, "We live in a poem." And then she read aloud some instructions from the bathroom about drying and tending to the floor after washing your hands, which were some instructions in the downstairs bathroom. But she was so touched by that, just the act of caring for the floor as well. You know, I thought about our zendo here, how we care for this very beautiful, loving floor that Kurt put in for us.
Yeah.
Right?
Did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a beautiful floor. So I reflected on Wright's speech. I reflected how maybe poetry is Zen's very first true language. The role of poetry in witnessing the suffering of ourselves and others. You know, how poems can make the unfelt felt completely. And how I think poetry can make the unseen seen. And this is why I think it's really the first language of Zen. It's a beautiful workshop. The second full day, we did a workshop called Work That Reconnects. This is based on the life's work of Joanna Macy. Joanna Macy is a Buddhist scholar, environmental activist. She's called a deep ecology author. I have to confess, I don't really know what deep ecology is, but Joanna Macy has written an amazing body of work, and so much of it is grounded in Buddhist principles. So this workshop was led by a woman named Stephanie Kaza, and she's an honored environmental studies professor at the University of Vermont. She's also a lay entrusted Soto Zen teacher. And she led us through the four steps of this work that reconnects. And the four steps are coming from gratitude, honoring our pain for the world, seeing with new / ancient eyes, and going forth. And so the steps of the work really facilitated the idea that to sustain us in the work of practicing empathy, we really need to get in touch with what we're grateful for. And we created this pool of gratitude in the middle of the floor and really turned to that for inspiration. And I thought it was a beautiful metaphor for life. We expressed our grief and private anguish for the global climate crisis. And then we got in touch with our own power around creating change, made commitments to consolidate that power and put that into action. And I reflected on just how inclusive we are in this practice. You know, when we vow to free all beings, we take it so seriously and also very literally. All beings, nobody left out. It includes the earth too. So there's a lot more to share about the conference. For example, there were peacocks everywhere. And they were in full mating dance regalia. It was fantastic. There was a moment where many of us sat and we listened to a Hindu service, which was incredibly special. We all sort of giggled about the nuances of how we all do services, like sometimes just a little bit differently, and enough to keep things kind of charmingly clumsy and not taking ourselves too seriously. But I wanted to leave you with this. Just connecting with the wider Branching Streams community, for me was to get this glimpse that we, all of us here, all of us on Zoom too, we are all part of this living, old, and long-standing, amazing practice. And we are all part of this weird, wonderful interconnectedness together. And good spiritual friends are the life of practice, right? To sustain us and inspire us. And I want to thank all of you for being together tonight in this wonderful sangha and the inspiration of your practice.
Are you open to taking questions or comments for people?
Oh, sure thing.
Okay. We can start with those in the room, and I'll try to make it so those on Zoom can let us know if they have questions.